Thank you. My name is Eric Smith. The title of my talk is Using Specific Conductance as a Tracer of Water Infiltration Through Glacial Till Soils in Iowa. A major theme of today's session is the spatial and temporal variability of contaminant transfer. I'll be working with that theme in terms of following the water across the landscape to the stream. More specifically, I'll be using specific conductance to follow the water through selected flow paths. As specific conductance is an indirect method of measuring the water's dissolved solid concentration, increases in specific conductance are related to longer contact times with the underlying geological matrix. So by differentiating these water flow paths, we can begin to understand which ones are important, how much water is moving through them, and perchance an extension to this would be what selected contaminants might move through those pathways. Our site location is in north central Iowa. The blue area here shows the extent of the Des Moines Lobe. And as you may or may not know, if you don't work in this part of the world, this has very poor drainage. So in order to help improve the agricultural production, mainly corn and soybeans, a lot of these fields here have subsurface drainage. The gray area here shows the South Fork of the Iowa River watershed with this little red dot showing this sub-watershed here, which is approximately 32 square kilometers. The South Fork of the Iowa River starts with this inverted triangle here. It's a confluence of three subsurface drains, three large county tile drains, and it moves up approximately 5 kilometers to our outlet gauge, where we also have a field site where we did most of the work of this study. Spatial variability is mainly related to scale. If you took a small spot in this field, say 1 square meter, and understood everything that was going on there, the antecedent moisture conditions, the amount of macroporosity, the exact makeup of the soil, the unsaturated and saturated hydraulic conductivity, you can really understand how the water infiltrates that spot, and thereby, if you have good sorption parameters, understand contaminant transport. But as you expand the scale out to the field scale, and this is just part of our field site, or to the greater watershed, you really have to start to use some average parameters in order to effectively model anything such as discharge or a contaminant. Another thing that's really important to understand is exactly what the flow paths that are important, and that's what I'm going to be talking about here. Here we have two different discharge records from our study. This is a 2-year record from the outlet gauge for the South Fork of the Iowa River. And this is just one day's worth of record from one of our subsurface drains. You can see that the discharge goes up to 100 cubic meters per second here and only maxes out at about 0.1 cubic meters per second, although we did see some higher flows. And then just one thing I wanted to point out is the seasonal variation that you see in the discharge as you move down towards the fall period. And it's just to point out that there is temporal variability as something to think about. So the two questions that I'm mainly dealing with today are, what are the characteristic specific conductivity values for these different flow paths? And can you use that in order to start to break up what the important sources are? And honing in on preferential flow, can you use that, the specific conductance, in order to figure out how much the subsurface drainage is due to preferential flow? Here are all the different flow paths or water sources that we identified at our field site. Overland runoff, precipitation, vadostone, vertical inlet structure to the subsurface drain, a ponded area, two different subsurface drains, and groundwater, both shallow and deep. All those that are highlighted in red were continuous measurements, and the rest were just discrete measurements. Here I just wanted to point out that the measurements were every 15 minutes, and it was with a specific conductance and temperature monitor. And the discrete measurements were event-driven in the case of, say, ponded areas or the overland flow, or seasonal sampling in the case of groundwater and the vadostone. Here's a spectrum of all the values that we had. Starting at the bottom, we have close to zero is precipitation, microsiemens per centimeter, all the way up to close to 900, the deep groundwater, 900 microsiemens per centimeter. Starting back at the bottom, we have overland flow of less than 12 hours till it hits the stream, and the temporary pond, which are also close to 100. And then as you move up, you have overland flow greater than 12 hours. So as you can see, the longer the contact time, minutes up to 12 hours, you start to increase the specific inductance. But these are all going to be grouped in what we call the fast flow sources. The slow flow sources here are going to range from the around 450 for the unsaturated zone up to this cluster here that's made up of our subsurface drains, the origin, which is just the confluence of three county tiles, and the groundwater, which are all very close to the stream water value. And then you have finally the groundwater value. And these are your slow flow sources, which range from greater than 12 hours up to months in the case of some deeper groundwater. Here are the two categories that I'll be honing in for the subsurface drain, preferential flow and matrix flow. For that, we will not be talking about overland flow because we only selected events that were very small that weren't going to have overland flow into the vertical inlet structures for the subsurface drain. And I'll get into the exact values that I use for the end member mixing here in a few slides. One of the observations that we made was that early in the study, it was that as the discharge increased right after a rainstorm, you saw this large drop in specific inductance. Now, this is nothing new. Many studies have shown this before. But we wanted to see if we could really use that specific inductance signal to start to separate out this discharge. We see the same sort of pattern for the subsurface drain, and that's the one I'm going to be talking about first. And here's the discharge that we have, obviously much smaller than the discharge for the overall stream, but substantial nonetheless. Once again, as a reminder, here's the spectrum of values that we're working with the preferential flow and the matrix flow ranges highlighted. So here's a pretty simple two-component analysis using the specific inductance. We have the component's discharge multiplied by its specific inductance, and those two are going to be equal, and this is matrix flow over here, and that's going to be equal to the subsurface drain discharge multiplied by its specific inductance. The second equation is just going to be those discharges. So we have two equations and two unknowns. If you do some simple substitution, you can solve for these discharges. The specific inductance that we use for the preferential flow is going to be 60 microsiemens per centimeter, and that's just based on periods where we saw nearly 100% of the flow likely attributable to preferential flow. That's the average value of those. And then the matrix flow was a little bit different. We used the two-hour average before any given event as its value, since that's a period you're not going to be having preferential flow. So here's the separation for the event that I just showed. And what we have here in gray is the preferential flow, and the rest is just the remnants, which is the matrix flow, basically. So you see preferential flow coming in within 2 hours, and then you see a peak of flow, close to 45% of the flow for this quite modest event here, coming in and greater, just a little over 3 hours. And then you see it waning quite quickly, although you don't see the discharge wane off as quickly. And that's probably due because a lot of it might be attributable to matrix flow at this point. Or another part of it is, one downside of this technique is that as you go along an event, you're going to start to lose that specific inductance signal because it's going to have that longer contact time. So this technique is going to work really well for this rising limb, which is the important period for preferential flow anyway. Here's a different event, quite different. In October now, the discharge is smaller now. But what you see, instead of a little bit of a delay, you see almost instantaneous preferential flow into the drain. Some of these spikes are closer to 80% of the flow due to preferential flow. Excuse me, but it almost drops off just as quickly. Now, one thing I forgot to point out, do you know how to go back on this? Oh, yeah. The temperature as well is another way to tell the preferential flow. You can see that the temperature rises quite quickly, and the rainfall was warmer than the groundwater at this point, so the temperature can act as a secondary signal for that preferential flow coming into the tile. And here you can see that drop again, and then you see the rise of the temperature. So it can also act as another signal that you could use. One other thing that we did is that we did synoptic views of the spatial variability of the specific inductance. We did this three different summers at low flow conditions. We sampled every single tile through here, and one of the parameters that we did was specific inductance. And what we found is quite a range in values, all the way from below 700, greater than actually 1400. I just have 1,000 here. Although there was still quite a cluster around 700 to 800, which is that groundwater and stream water value, you still see quite a bit of variability. So it's important to keep that in mind, that each field is going to behave differently because it's going to have different conditions. So this technique is, if you're using it at a larger scale, you have to keep that in mind. Here's another in-member mixing analysis, this time for the stream itself. But instead of calling it preferential flow, we're going to call it fast flow, because now we're going to have overland flow and vertical tile inlet water into the subsurface drains as well. So once again, in close to just under 8 hours, you see from the start of the rainfall event, you see this huge spike in discharge. The technique detected about 35% of the water due to the fast flow, although probably a lot more of it here is due to it. It's just that perhaps the signal is lost in the fact that it's picked up a higher specific inductance quite quickly. But as you go, the matrix flow and the longer flow paths begin to take over. And then finally, you have longer flow paths after one day out to several weeks. Now here's a longer discharge record, 6 months for the stream itself. And you see these large spikes in discharge again and again, along with specific inductance drops. Now these are fairly modest events, so these are not going to be candidates for overland flow. It's more likely the reason for this is due to the preferential flow once again. So this is a pattern that we see over and over again. And if you really wanted, we could separate out this long period of time and really start to account for how much the water is due to preferential flow. I'm not going to go into that today. Today was just, I just want to kind of demonstrate the technique for a couple of events and for the stream itself. Some closing comments that I wanted to make. The preferential flow has a very short time scale, and it can contribute over 45% of the flow at peak. That one event we had actually up to 80% of the flow. And this is the same in the literature as well. It is a very important contributor to the overall stream discharge. And as the water has very little time for natural attenuation, this could be a very important contaminant pathway for pesticides and nutrients. I just say nitrate here. But it's something that could definitely be an important contaminant pathway. And we know that already, but it's when you start to categorize how much the flow path is due to preferential flow, you could really start to figure out how important it is. And then there's also this high likelihood of potentially underestimating the preferential flow as the event goes on. The drain and the stream can both be used with this technique, and with a little bit more control over your study area, you could start to really do multi-component analysis instead of just a two-component analysis. And as specific connectivity is relatively cheap to collect, this is a really good technique to use. Just wanted to point out this is part of the USGS NACLA program, and also wanted to thank the University of Minnesota Water Resources Program and then a few individuals that helped out immensely with this. And there's my contact info. So. Mm-hmm. What's the source of the conductance or the source
what's
of
the
preferential flow?
If you have a, for example, long duration rain, it should be washed out. Eventually, the signal will go away, right? Even if you have another event comes in, then you will not have the ions get into the water to increase the conductance.
Well, the ions are, I think, are always going to be there in order to get into the water. Well, it's coming from the geological matrix. It's just the dissolved ions, the calcium and the magnesium and all the other dissolved ions that are going to be coming in from the soil itself. This is all the salts. Yeah. I guess I should have pointed out what kind of soils there were, too. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah.
Life, for instance, preference flow and landscape. Old root canal. from that flow path into the stream. So I guess my question is, how do you envision what these flow paths are that you're calling preferential flow?
Yeah, well, that the 45% I was talking about, the subsurface drain itself, not the...
Even that seems pretty outstanding, amazing.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess the question is, where else was the water coming from?
I mean,
I agree. I know, but I mean, this particular tile doesn't have an inlet structure that's really viable for small events, and these are pretty small events. So I agree with you, it is a little bit confounding, but we do see a lot of evidence for cracks that form in the soil above the where the drain is at. There are a lot of root channels here, so I agree, while it is a little bit surprising, yeah.
Is it no-till?
No, it's not no-till, no. But thank you, that, yeah.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.